I stand for wisdom. I stand for liberating on our shining spirit.
I stand for hope.
I stand for vision.
I stand for vision.
I stand for building just the world we want to live in.
I stand alone. I stand with
all my heart.
I stand and
pray that we will choose today to make a start.
I stand with
you. I stand with kindred souls. I stand with millions all around the globe.
Hi, that beautiful song was by the Jewel Tones, who are a local singing group. They play at some churches or sing at some churches. And also I know they've been over at the Oasis at Carmel Mall. So keep a watch out for them. They're beautiful harmony. And beautiful harmony is what we're hoping for this world. And today, Dick and I are going to be the program, and we're going to...
Well, give Miriam some credit, too.
And we're going to be doing some current events. And so...
With emphasis on local current events.
Local current events. And we're going to start off with our community, and it's going to be a lot about our state, which also affects our community. So there's a lot going on in North Carolina, as I'm sure many of you know, and we're going to be talking about it. So, Dick, you're going to start off with the big controversy.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to actually start off with a short news announcement. On April 14th, Raise Up for 15 will have a demonstration. Is that what it is? A picketing, whatever, at the McDonald's on 102 Morgan Street in Durham. In downtown Durham, on the downtown loop. And that will be, what time is it?
5 o'clock, and it's part of a nationwide continuing struggle for $15 an hour.
5 a.m. or p.m.?
P.m.
Okay, because I have done the a.m. too.
That too. But this time it's p.m.
This time it's p.m., okay. And I wanted to make sure to get that announcement in.
Yes, and there's another announcement that I almost forgot, and thank goodness you said something about some announcements. On April 13th, the day before the big raise-up, WILF, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, is very proud to announce that two of our national co-chairs, they're co-chairs of the WILF Disarmament Committee, they're doing a tour. They did a tour in the West Coast, and now they're doing a tour on the East Coast called the Nuclear Freeze Tour. And they're going to be here in downtown Carrboro at our radio station on Wednesday, April 13th, at our usual time, 5 to 6 o'clock. They're going to be talking about, so this is going to be really interesting, global nuclear weapon abolition, and the conversion from nuclear and fossil fuel energy to truly clean renewable energy. So they're going to be here. And then after our radio show, a little bit later at 7:30, they are going to be at Balance and Accuracy in Journalism, which is at the Community Church at 7:30. They have it on the second Wednesday of most months. And so they will be on our radio show. Please listen. And then you can also go hear them in person at the Community Church at 7:30 with Jerry Markitis's Balance and Accuracy in Journalism.
And that's April 13th.
That's April 13th. And we will be talking more about it next week and telling you a little bit more about, oh, and I'll tell you their names, so Carol Ulmer and Ellen Thomas, if any of you like to look up and Google people, and we'll be telling you a lot more about them next week. So a lot of exciting things are coming up, but a lot of exciting things and not all of it good, in fact, a lot of it not very good, is happening here in North Carolina. So, Dick, do you want to start talking about?
Yeah, about HB2?
HB2.
Right. This is actually my view from the Chapel Hill News opinion page, and it's by Kirk Ross. The House Bill 2 and the kids in the hall. The room was packed. There were more cameras lined up than maybe ever. The Charlotte stations were in town in Raleigh, where their story became our story, all of us. It was the city's fault the legislators sponsoring the Public Facilities Privacy and Securities Act would say. It was the city's fault for amending their non-discrimination ordinance in a way they found disgusting. And after months to practice, by the time the legislature convened, they were really good at sounding disgusted. Most of the state, everyone who had not been planning this for months, got its first look at the bill a little after 10 a.m. Wednesday, after Speaker Tim Moore gaveled in the special session and everyone had prayed and said the Pledge of Allegiance. Several minutes later, the bill was sent to a House Judiciary Committee for review, which took about an hour. Its approval was never in question. The only unknowns were how open the sponsors would be to amendments and whether there would be much time, if any, for public comment. One Democrat asked the Judiciary Chairman for at least 5 or 10 minutes so that everyone could read the bill. She got 5. Easily gleaned in that 5 minutes was that this bill reached far beyond Charlotte and the gender freakout among conservatives. It was clearly another move by the legislature to bring local governments to heel. The act includes extensive sections clarifying that cities and counties have no authority to impose anti-discrimination and living wage rules on contractors beyond what the state and federal laws require. It wipes away local anti-discrimination ordinances, preempting it with a statewide law that does not include sexual orientation and gender identity among its protected classes. It also does not include veteran status, which some local governments and employers have adopted to protect people being discriminated against because of their service. Also included was a shift in how employee lawsuits are handled, a change that was quickly read as a gift to business interests in exchange for silence. Had the bill been put out earlier, we might have been even more pushed back on the prospect of joining Mississippi as the only states without a state law protecting employees in the private sector from discrimination. In the little time allotted for public comment before both House and Senate committees, what we did hear, interspersed with the fearful stories of proponents, were actual experiences of hurt and harm and the outrage of many who know that what the legislature did on Wednesday will cause more of it. There were truth to power moments. A 15-year-old from Greenville described what it's been like to grow up being bullied in school. Then in a cool, clear tone, told legislature, "I feel bullied by you guys." When the packed room unpacked and the crowd headed for the elevator, some people hugged, others took out their phones. What was striking was how many teens had shown up. Most of the time, seeing a lot of young people in the halls of our legislature is uplifting. But not if you met the eyes of those kids on Wednesday. There was determination, some anger, and a lot of frustration, but there was not much hope in their eyes. The next generation of North Carolinians may grow up in a state that is far more inclusive, but those coming of age today are caught, like the rest of us, in limbo, while the politics of division drives the policies of our democracy. The world will turn, but not today and not tomorrow. It took less than a day to turn Charlotte's attempt to be fair into a statewide right to discriminate. It will take years to undo the law and far longer to undo the damage.
That was, I guess you already said, the editorial by Kirk Ross in the Chapel Hill paper that's just was so good. and so inclusive. But we also have one of our WILF members with us today, Miriam Thompson, and there's one of those provisions that she really wants to emphasize because labor is one of her strong, passionate issues.
There are actually two things. The line is that it won't happen today or tomorrow, but Dick will talk later about 1,000 young people in the streets who are going to lead this movement as they have when we grew up in the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s. So people are taking to the streets, and Lori's going to talk later about the ACLU lawsuit and so on. But it's important to note that Carrboro was the first town that issued a condemnation of the law in a resolution. They met on a Saturday. They came together to issue a resolution. Chapel Hill did it the next day. I know the county commissioners have joined in, you know, in opposition. So people need to commend their Carrboro and Chapel Hill council members. They need to call their commissioners and thank them for their support. And we're really looking for two things. One, they sneaked in this worker piece, It is not about bathrooms. It is about really putting more restrictions on workers' rights in this state to suppress worker organizing and continue the low-wage, you know, profit-making economy. That's what it was about. So it would prevent...
It's not profit-making, it's profiteering.
Profiteering, that's right, profiteering off the backs of workers. So that they put in that no county or municipality could increase the minimum wage that was deliberately designed well before they tried to use the bathrooms as a fear tactic and a distraction.
And they've used it as sort of almost a wedge issue to increase their power over the municipalities and also to suppress workers.
Here's the
and
good thing.
This is what a lot of people don't realize. The emphasis has been on the bathrooms because that is
right.
Very controversial and gets people's emotions going, but there's these other issues that are playing sort of a backseat for the moment to gain people's attention that are even as bad, if not more insidious.
And as Dick read, it will not change Chapel Hill, Carrboro, or the county from their own public workforce that they have already raised the minimum wage. It will, however, affect those with whom they contract to provide public services. And a lot of their budget is spent contracting for services. Those workers will not be protected, nor, as Dick said earlier, read earlier, will they be able to sue in state court. They'll have to take the arduous and much more expensive. And the last thing I want to say is the other great design of this, as the mayor of Charlotte said at a meeting some of us attended, it was to take away the power, continuing to erode the power and further disenfranchise voters of their county elected governments and municipal governments.
And the irony of that is that the Republicans are always talking about that they stand for small government. And if you just lived in North Carolina, all you can see is the big state more and more imposing its will on all the municipalities. So take that in your pipe and smoke it, folks, if you want to believe the propaganda
of small government. Just small enough to fit in your bathroom.
Yeah.
Or your bedroom.
As long as the Republicans are in control.
So Miriam just alluded to, that there is a lawsuit, and this is an evolving, very quickly evolving controversy. The measure drew a lawsuit. It's the ACLU, the two transgender people, and a lesbian law professor from North Carolina Central filed a lawsuit in federal court early Monday, challenging North Carolina's new law that bans local governments from passing local anti-discrimination ordinances and dictates that transgender residents use the public restroom of their biological sex. The legal challenge announced Monday by representatives from the ACLU of North Carolina, thank goodness for them, Lambda Legal and Equality North Carolina, added more backlash over a law that within days of its adoption has drawn strong opposition from major corporations, professional and college sports organizations, and the White House. The challenges countered that HB2 permits discrimination against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people across the state, singling them out for disfavored, quote and unquote, disfavored treatment. I'm reading this from the News and Observer, by the way. I want to give them credit. They argue that the law dictates that the U.S. Constitution argues that the law violates the U.S. Constitution and makes North Carolina the first state to require public schools and university students to use only those bathrooms that match their gender on their birth certificate, a Title IX violation. And that makes you wonder if people are supposed to go to school with their birth certificates. How do they enforce this law?
They won't be able to.
They won't be able to.
And by the way, they're asking they change their birth certificates from the sex in which they were born to the sex of their, identity. But Tennessee doesn't allow you to. They just gave one example yesterday. You can't change your birth certificate.
Now we know what they really have the SROs for.
Yeah, right.
Well, it says this cruel, insulting and unconstitutional law is an attack on fairness in employment, education, and local governance that encourages discrimination upon thousands of LGBT people who call North Carolina home, and particularly targets, quote, transgender men and women, says Chris Brooks, legal director of the ACLU of North Carolina. And the other ironic point with all the talk about how we can't afford Medicaid expansion, we can't afford more money for education, they spend $42,000.
An hour.
On a special.
not total.
I think a total. On a special legislative session to block the Charlotte City Council's ordinance. So
they must think it's a Trump fence because they're trying to get Charlotte to pay for it.
So we just want to point that out. And then the next thing in this unfolding thing, the next thing that happened a day or so after that, or maybe the next day, is that Roy Cooper, our attorney general, refuses to defend the state. He's a Democrat gubernatorial candidate. He called the law a national embarrassment, and he plans to stay in his elected post. So Roy Cooper, this is from the News and Observer, the North Carolina Attorney General said on Tuesday, so it was the day after the lawsuit, one day later, this is a quickly unfolding thing, said that his office will not defend North Carolina officials and state agencies against the law adopted last week that strikes down locally enacted protections for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. Cooper called the measure a national embarrassment that will set North Carolina's economy back if we don't repeat it. So
that they repeal it.
Repeal it.
Repeal it.
Well, yes, and that is what the same day, the editorial in the News and Observer, just what you're saying, roll back HB2.
Right.
On one of the stranger twists in the uproar over North Carolina HB2, it's that its Republican backers keep defending it as a common sense issue. In truth, the so-called bathroom bill has to rank among the state's weirdest pieces of legislation. The law addresses a problem that doesn't exist. Men claiming to be transgender women so they can peep and pray in women's bathrooms, but it's created a real problem that its backers refuse to see. Damage to the state's image and its economy. So that
I just want to underscore that this was a distraction from the real intent of the legislature to reduce local power to enforce, which it has done for years, Charlotte, and other municipalities.
Right,
and,
well, they've been,
and the anti-worker.
And they've been trying to do that, what, with that airport outside
Asheville,
with the water system outside Charlotte, I think it was, that editorial about rollback HB2. They say the other thing, it was conceived as an election year wedge.
Right.
Issue that Republicans thought would rally their base and put Cooper on the defensive.
Based on hate.
Instead,
yeah,
it has embarrassed
right.
thoughtful Republicans and set back the economic development that Republicans keep saying that they want to promote. So there we go. And there's a further development the next day or that night. So Dick, you
well, this was actually last evening.
Yes, so this is Wednesday. So that was
right.
that very night. Tuesday was when the Attorney General is in the paper that he refuses to defend the state because it's unconstitutional.
Right.
And then that night.
And in Chapel Hill News,
mm-hmm.
Dated March 29th, hundreds block downtown Chapel Hill to protest state's HB2 law. And hundreds turns out to be nearly 1,000, mostly young people, marched Tuesday evening into East Franklin Street, past rainbow flags and a single line of stopped cars, while calling on Governor Pat McCrory and the state legislature to repeal HB2. "If you are silent about your pain, they will kill you and say you enjoyed it," said Joey Liu, a rally organizer and transgender person who goes by the pronoun they. Liu said they were attacked twice for being a transgender person and believes strongly in the quote from author Zora Neale Hurston, "They will try to diminish our worth, to kill our spirits, to kill us physically. But it is our duty as the ones who are still remaining to fight and to be very loud and very vocal about the way that we are feeling." The state's new law bans local governments from passing anti-discrimination ordinances and requires transgender people to use the public restrooms of their biological sex. It was passed after a 12-hour special session held last week in response to Charlotte's new ordinance allowing transgender people to use the bathrooms of the gender with which they identify. So, let's see.
Yeah, I do want to point out, Dick, that Reverend Barber just issued an incredible statement. Together, I think he works very closely with North Carolina Policy Watch. But what he helped frame was this is not just a horrific and hateful a condemnation or crime against LGBTQ people, but really all people. All people, oppressed people, will be suffering, that suffer discrimination and oppression, are going to be really diminished by this law. So it's broad in reach and dangerous in implication.
Yeah, and if you don't have any other, obviously, handicapping condition, being a person who works for a living is going to be that much more difficult because they can fire you for anything.
And imagine veterans, not protecting veterans
right.
who are butts of discrimination. I mean,
yeah.
It's just one group of humanity after another.
Right, and they meet somebody who's a soldier or a sailor, and you recognize them by saying, "Thank you for your service," and this is what they give you.
By the way, I do think we should give a shout-out for the three plaintiffs. One, we met this Joaquim Sarcano, I think it is, who's a UNC Chapel Hill employee.
Joaquim
Sarcano. Then Peyton Gray McGarry, transgender UNC Greensboro. Sarcano is at UNC Chapel Hill, an employee. And then Angela Gilmore, who I've met, a 52-year-old lesbian who lives in Durham and works at NC Central, where she's an associate dean and professor at the law school. So,
And can sure pick
and,
them.
Of course, the whole Charlotte community that voted to really protect and pass and abort right. and reinforce their anti-discrimination history. And their mayor is really impressive.
Yeah. What are we going to do? I mean, it's. I saw a headline online just before I came, and I couldn't print it out because I ran out of ink in my printer. But it said that 90% of the candidates, at least the Republican candidates, 90% of them have for the state legislature have no opposition.
I think it's 80%, but we have enough force to prevent an override, and we can force the governor out, and some of these people are not running again, so I think it's important to vote. But right now, I think it's important for people to call the governor. I think we should commend our legislators, Verla Insko, Greg Meyer, and Valerie Fouché, our senator, for really voting right. But I think we ought to, any friends we have in Republican districts, need to shout out and say this was an absolute disgrace, and you're putting North Carolina, the leadership of the General Assembly is putting North Carolina in the toilet, and absolutely call Governor McCrory. So, you know, there are some immediate steps, and keep tuned because the county and the municipalities may be taking further action, and they're going to need our support.
Now might be a good time to take a station break.
Okay.
It's about that time. This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show. That's the Triangle branch of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. excuse me. And we are coming to you over the facilities of WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. You can tune in on 103.5, which many of you are doing now, or you can use your computer to connect to the internet, to the station's computer, and it will feed what's happening on the air to your computer so that you can watch it at any appropriate time. Excuse me. And the website for the computer, for the station, is wcomfm.org. That's wcomfm.org.
And our TV.
Right. And we also are putting our broadcast up, except we won't do it for today because our camera operator was not available. But... We are sending these shows to to the People's Channel, which is Channel 8 on Time Warner Cable, Channel 4 that's Channel 8 in Chapel Hill on Time Warner Cable, Channel 4 on Time Warner Cable in Carrboro, and for those of you who have AT&T U-verse, it's you go to channel 99 and then select the WCOM People's Channel number, which I think is 8.
On AT&T?
Yeah.
I think it's 99.
Yeah, you start with 99 and you have to do something else.
Oh, you have to do something else.
Yeah. And I think that the next thing you do is to select channel 8. And that occurs at least on Thursdays at 10 o'clock. And it may occur at other times depending upon the load and what's submitted to the People's Channel. And we encourage you also to watch Amy Goodman, because we have an ad on each side of Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! show every morning.
And it's a beautiful ad.
Yeah.
And a great show.
Yeah, it's
a great show.
It really
that's the
is
important thing.
A wonderful show.
Yeah,
Pacifica Radio is still doing it.
Yeah, they still are.
So,
and
I think that.
And I just want to mention again. on April 13th, and then you can mention Raise Up on April 13th here on our own little radio show. We will have two national WILF, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, co-chairs of the their disarmament committee, who are doing a nuclear freeze tour on the East Coast. Some months back, they did the West Coast. So bless their hearts, they're traveling around, and one of them's in a wheelchair, and they're traveling in a car, and we're going to be thrilled to have Carol Ulmer and Ellen Thomas here on Wednesday the 13th on our radio show, and they will be talking about global nuclear weapon abolition and also the conversion from nuclear and fossil fuel energy to truly clean energy.
Renewable energy.
Yeah. And then they'll be a little bit later at 7:30. Our show ends at 6. At 7:30, they'll be at the community church at 7:30 with Balance and Accuracy in Journalism, which is on the second Wednesday of most months, and they will be on there. So you can listen to them on a show and then go see them in person. And anybody who misses the show, please go there. And if you can't go there, make sure you don't miss our show, because they're going to be really good.
Better if you go to both.
Yes, we think it's better if you go definitely to both. And then, Dick, you might want to talk about the 14th.
Yeah, but I want to mention before that WILF has a website, which I had not mentioned.
Oh, yes.
And that's
yes.
Triangle, WILPF.org. That's Triangle, WILPF.org. And the other announcement we have is that Raise Up for 15 is having a demonstration picketing on April 14th. That's 2 weeks from now, April 14th. And it will be at 102 Morgan Street in Durham, which is the McDonald's in downtown Durham. And it will be at 5 p.m. And it will be part of a nationwide effort for Raise Up for 15 to get more and more of its demands met. They've been doing well. They've been getting a fair
California
number of contracts.
Right. And that's why our state, that's one of the things they're trying to stop.
That's right.
They are trying to stop workers that municipalities can have their contractors have to meet the new minimum wage.
Right.
And this is all part of this state control over all these throughout the whole state. So
I'm glad you made that connection, because I think
the
SB2 and the Raise Up 15 are really intimately connected.
Yes,
and we're going to be making that statement when we join the workers outside McDonald's.
Yeah,
so
I think that's going to be so important, because a lot of people are busy with their own lives and think, oh, well, I'm sorry, you know, that this is happening for discrimination for LGBT people, but this isn't really affecting me. And that's why I think we're really trying to push the point, yes, this law does affect you. It affects all of us. It affects the whole state and will affect the state's economy, because it's coincidental with our legislature passing this regressive law. Georgia's governor and our governor, when he was first told, because they did it so hurriedly, when he was first asked about it, he said, oh, I'm traveling. I don't know much about it. I'll have to find out. And then all of a sudden he comes out defending it like crazy. But at the same time, Georgia, a sister state that we're in competition with for some of these businesses for our economy, their governor, who is a Republican, turned it down because it was going to hurt their economy, and he got pressure from some businesses that
big
are
big businesses.
Yes, big businesses in that state. So they are moving ahead into being a more progressive southern state. You know, the South is not the most progressive area in the country, and those of us who are progressive who live here, we keep struggling to get our state into the 21st century. And our present legislature is just as hard pushing back and trying to move us back to the 19th century, not the 20th even. So this is so important to realize this law affects all of us, and it particularly affects workers, but that affects the economy, which affects every single one of us in many ways that we are just beginning to pay attention to. So there. Okay, so what we
how about the kitchen?
Yes, thank you, Miriam. Thank
a
you.
Really wonderful outpouring of democracy.
Yes, it was. The IFC has wanted for quite a while. I think this started last May with applying to the community. The IFC wants to move its community kitchen from 100 West Rosemary Street, which, as you know, is in that used to be a jail, used to be many things. It's a building that is falling apart in many ways. It needs major overhaul. And the town of Chapel Hill wants to refurbish it and probably rent it out. So right now the community kitchen's been there for many, many years. And so the IFC wants to move it from Rosemary Street in downtown Chapel Hill. They want to combine it with the kitchen with their food pantry, which is already operating in downtown Carrboro. The IFC owns that building, owns that piece of property, and instead of having some food there for people to pick up and other food for the kitchen, it would really be a big help with resources to have them in the same place. So it's been applied to the town, but before it can even happen, there has to be a change in zoning or a land use rule. So when was this? Last
Tuesday, I think.
Last Tuesday, thank you. The Board of Aldermen voted unanimously, 7-0, to amend the town's land use rules for a possible community kitchen during a public hearing Tuesday night, where some of the there have been some critics, some of the businesses, and they were the only ones who really were knowing about this very much, so that this was a public hearing where they could get more diverse opinions, and there was quite a turnout. The Alderman's vote did not clear the way for the kitchen, but instead the change to the town's land use ordinance, approved after 3.5 hours of public comment at Carrboro Elementary School, means that such a use is no longer prohibited. So it's one hurdle. The headline is IFC Kitchen clears the first hurdle, and that first hurdle was this ordinance. So now there is not a prohibition to have a community kitchen in downtown Carrboro. So this is very exciting.
It also shows the difference from the mean-spirited legislature. There was such an outpouring of love. Wilf testified. The NAACP testified. Lots of people got up to really talk about how important it is to really support with love our neighbors who are less fortunate. That kind of conversation was omitted in the state legislature. So to see the difference of how people coming out, really reaching out to one another, as opposed to the state legislature that's looking for ways in which they can control their power by building on hate. They're all full of Trump.
And what was moving was how much support the Interfaith Council has in this town, because they asked people who were on the board, to stand up. And, of course, I don't know, some people stood up. But then they asked those who were volunteers, And I was absolutely heartened how many people are volunteers at the IFC. And, you know, so there was great love and support for what the Interfaith Council does. And also, the people were very knowledgeable giving the statistics. A lot of people know that this is a quite well-to-do community. What they don't know is that Orange County and this community has a high rate of hunger, and some of our citizens dealing with food insufficiency. I think one out of four school kids who go to the Chapel Hill Carborough schools, I'm not talking about out in the county, are on free or reduced lunches. Many of them get backpacks from Porch, which is another wonderful organization, so they can bring food home to get through the weekend when there's not their school lunches to sustain them. I don't think a lot of people realize that this is a community that has quite well-to-do people, and quite a few of our citizens are struggling, and that's the hidden part that you don't see and don't realize until somebody's at a meeting like that and telling it's not a feeling, it's a fact, what those stories are and what those statistics are.
It gets back to Raise Up 15, by the way.
Yes, it does.
Many of these families are working. And
yes.
They're working at low-wage jobs and are barely surviving. And that's why this food support is so critical.
Absolutely. So that was a wonderful meeting to be at. It's still going to be controversial. I think I remember that we had, you remember that, Dick, we had Michael Runke, who is the relatively new, I guess he's had his first year now, or close to it, head of Interfaith Council, IFC, and we had him on the show several months ago.
Right.
And he talked about that they were going to be hoping to have a community kitchen, and that, you know, some of the businesses may be anxious about it. And he said, you know, one of the things, if they're anxious about people having their food and then hanging around, he said, you know, we'll try to work with them. We can always have like a day room. So, but a lot of people, when I was going to the community church, I volunteered for some of the lunches, which was so much fun and so heartwarming. It's always wonderful to feed people. But a lot of the people came in. It wasn't just homeless people. A lot of working people came in. A lot of guys in construction, you know, came in who are struggling and you know, buying lunches and having time, and you have to be to work at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning to make it is not always easy. So there was a lot of, I would say, mostly working people coming in for those lunches, and I don't think people realize that. So believe me, most of them are not going to be hanging around if that's
exactly
the fear is. And if that is an issue or could become an issue, I think the Interfaith Council will work with the community. And I thought that idea of a day room was a great idea for people to have a place to hang out. Right across the street is the, not Charles House, but the Club Nova. And so I know some people from there come to the food pickup. So that's a place that some people who come, I know, to pick up food have to go. And it's a wonderful place for them to have a place to gather. So I think all of these little hitches will work out. And I'm hoping that the community as a whole will support this. So we have some work to do to let people know more about it. And I think the Interfaith Council is really good at doing that. So this was a sharp contrast what was happening in Carborough, a very sharp contrast with what's happening in the state. But the other part, as you pointed out earlier, Miriam, that already people are pushing back. And a lot of businesses are pushing back. And so I think that I think they're going to have egg on their face, and I hope that they're smart enough, although I wouldn't count on that they'll roll it back, but we'll see what happens. We got to get out there. But that just increases the incentive to not only get out and vote yourself, most of us will, but to bring other people out to vote with you.
I just wanted to summarize what we were talking about earlier what people can do now.
Yes.
If you Google Governor McCrory, he needs to hear from every resident.
Yes, he does.
You need to get to Phil Berger, and I think you gave the name of the, I think the head of the, Phil Berger, I think is House, the other guy, I'm not sure, is Senate. They need to get,
it's we Tillis
need
to get, Berger
no, and, Tillis is already, unfortunately, yes. our senator. But there's, I can't remember the other guy. Isn't that funny? I'm blanking it out. But at any rate, the head of the House, the head of the Senate, the House and the Senate need to be contacted in Raleigh, and they need to hear the outrage as to what you're doing to this state. The other thing is there are soon going to be candidate forums, and I think everyone, you know, whoever it is running for local office, state office, national office, needs to come down and be and demands to really protest this bill and demand its repeal.
Yes, ditto. Yes, so there's going to be a lot of organizing going on, a lot of, and that was wonderful, those students last night.
In Chapel Hill.
Chapel Hill. I didn't know about it till this morning. I called a friend in the hospital, and she was, and I had not listened to the local news. I was listening to Amy Goodman, and I said, "What? You know, I got to find out about that." So we're very excited about that. Speaking about workers, Miriam, I'm going to let you tell about this. This is about the Supreme Court. Scalia is gone, who would have really voted against the union.
Well, they would have lost.
They would have lost. So they have not wanted to put anybody else in. Again, the Republicans operating out of bitterness and anger and meanness. But they won't write. So far, who knows what will happen, but so far they will not even talk as a group.
This is a big case. For those of us who know about the danger of an open shop where the union can negotiate
this is
a contract.
This is a victory for the union.
This is a victory for the the case was brought by 10 California public school teachers. The Supreme Court on Tuesday handed organized labor a major victory, deadlocking.
We get so few.
Deadlocking 4-4, which means they upheld a lower court.
Yes.
That supported the public unions, threatened to cripple the ability of public unions, all public unions in California, to collect fees. Well, it would have been all over the country to collect fees from workers who chose not to join and did not want to pay for the union's collective bargaining activities. Underscore, did not want to pay. You can choose not to be in the union.
Yes.
That's your choice. But you pay an administrative fee in because the union is negotiating benefits that you enjoy. So you're not giving the unions
so you're not
anything
free
they
riding
haven't earned.
On those.
You're getting a free ride. A, you don't have to join. That's your choice. Out of conscience, that's fine. But you should be pay a fee to support the union's work on your behalf in getting you the benefits and the wage increases that you enjoy.
And that protection for the union's been in there for 40 years. So this is really a victory that, you know, unfortunately the way things go with some of our politicians, they may try again, but for now we can really enjoy that.
And by the way, there are going to be many other important cases that come up.
Mm-hmm.
So the Republicans, I think, are eating their, you know, their
humble pie,
and not allowing a moderate, for example, you know, to be put on the court. But obviously, the four progressive or liberal members, whatever you want to call them, voted, and this upheld the lower court decision that enabled the union position to stand. And by the way, Scalia was violently anti-union.
He was
conspicuously anti-union.
Yes.
So he clearly would have voted against the unions in this case. So it's really a very important case. Of course, in North Carolina, we don't allow collective bargaining for our public workers. It's the still existing, even under the Democrats, I should add, of the old Jim Crow laws that prevented public workers from collective bargaining. They can join unions, but they can't collective bargaining.
Mm-hmm.
They can meet and greet, but, you know, we can continue that struggle to give workers here the right to organize, the right to collectively bargain, whether they're private or public workers.
And for any of those who don't understand the value of unions, you know, in the South there were people who fought, and there were bloody fights in the 20s and 30s to allow unions in the South. But they used the race card and were able to suppress. And so if you look at the wage differences between the North and the South, it shows the value of unions. Where there are unions, it lifts all boats. You know, the wages go up for everybody. So the fight for unions is a fight for justice for workers, for everybody. And I just wanted to underscore that, because I think a lot of people are – we ought to have a whole program about unions, Mary. Maybe you could help
yeah,
us set
that
up. Because
really
there's a lot of ignorance
right.
about unions. And granted that they are not perfect, but again, yeah. if you want to have fairness for workers, they're one bulwark against total power of the corporations to keep you down.
I just want to – I think that's so important, and I think we should talk – I think we should have a program on unions. It would really be
yes,
wonderful.
Yes, an education
but I
program.
Want to point out there was a woman sitting next to me at NC Policy Watch. I just want to give a shout-out for NC Policy Watch that had a lunch yesterday on SB2 with the Charlotte mayor and the legal director of ACLU and one of the plaintiffs. But – this woman next to me belongs to the Sierra Club. And I said to her, you know, Sierra Club is a union. Union means collective. You are putting community, you know, power together to achieve a goal. I don't care if you belong to a union or Sierra Club or WILF or all of this is binding together as a strong social
entity. In unity,
entity.
There is strength.
In unity, there is strength. That's what union is. So we need to redefine.
So how did she respond?
She was really more, I mean, I think she was somewhat sympathetic but not exactly clear.
Yeah.
But then when I made the parallel, what is Sierra Club? It is a union of like-minded environmentalists
yes.
who together are more powerful than one.
Than one person.
Right.
And that's a great point. So I'd like you, Miriam, I'm giving you a charge from our team here to please help us put together an education program on unions, because there are many well-meaning people who never grew up knowing much about unions. And they really, and they've heard a lot of anti-union propaganda, and they're good-hearted people and smart people. And I think if just even presenting some of that information could make a difference. And I think that would be a really good thing to do, especially that we're in the South, which is ignorant.
I think you also
that.
Said something important, that you need to distinguish. There are sometimes, and I've seen layers of different leadership. You know, there's one thing about fighting for unionism. There are certainly people who abuse, you know, the importance of union. There are people who abuse the church. There are people who
exactly.
abuse our legislature. There are people who violently abuse corporate power, you know, to diminish disenfranchise mm-hmm. voters. So we are an imperfect species,
mm-hmm.
and all our organizations always need attention.
Exactly.
But unions are a critical force.
But the unions are the one that gets so much publicity of any little thing because of this prevailing anti-union sentiment that's promoted by those in power,
right?
You know,
right.
and get people confused. And that's why I think we think of our show as a way to kind of educate ourselves and educate people who are listening to in more depth than some of, you know, I think people are listening. We all know a lot about a lot of things, but a lot of times we don't know in depth. And so that's what we try to you know, when we have our guests, we try to have somebody get it from the horse's mouth, you know, whatever it's about. So that's why I'd like to have some union people on, but also to give an overview.
Yeah,
of the history of unions.
Of unions,
and
right.
we could play some great, we have some great union music,
right.
Solidarity Forever, and just emphasizing what you're just saying, how we all need, to have any power, we need to be in some kind of community, collective group to get to struggle to get our issue out there and get get some traction with it.
Well, there you saw the students, you know, last night. There you saw the people at ISC.
Yeah.
There you see the people in collective force coming out against, you know, SB2. I mean, everywhere we turn, our anti-war movement, you know, the struggle continues.
Okay, right. And Dick, what I want us to start doing, which we can start tonight since we don't have a guest, that we're supposed to end about 5 of. And,
about a minute, yes.
Well, we can take a couple of minutes, but to get ourselves used to thinking about that. So I'm not sure who we're going to have on next week, at the end of the month, we're going to have a Carborough alderman, Damon Sells, is going to be on the last Wednesday of the month. And then on the 13th, we're going to have
two WILF
national co-chairs on, talking about on the nuclear freeze tour. So we got some good things coming up. And so maybe we could go out on some music. You want to play a little bit more of the Jewel Tones, or is there something else you'd like to play?
No, that's good. I think we got to think about doing that at both ends.
Yeah, I think we should too, to go out on some music. And this is a program about we stand for peace, we stand for justice, and when we heard them, Emily and I at church, we just said, oh, we got it. And they were so gracious. The Jewel Tones said, yes, we'd love to have it be on your show. Just mention us once in a while.
I should remind people that Democracy Now! Always takes a break and plays music that speaks the message, but in song.
Right. And that's what we want to do a little bit more of, absolutely.
Okay, here we go.
Miriam, I'm glad you came because it's always nice.
Grieving and frightened, full of rage and despair, I am fighting a war against war and getting nowhere. They say you become what you think on. My heart's become a battlefield. Who am I if I'm only against? What am I for? How am I healed? I stand for peace.
I stand for justice.
I stand for unity
and equality among us.
I stand for love.
I stand for joy and mirth.
I stand for treasuring the riches of this planet Earth.
I stand for life.
I stand for freedom.
I stand for celebrating all the gifts we're given.
I stand for truth.
I stand for wisdom.
I stand for liberating all our shining spirit.
I stand for hope.
I stand for vision.
I stand for vision.
I stand for building just the world we want to live in.
I stand alone. I stand with
all my heart.
I stand and
pray that we will choose today to make a start.
I stand with
you. I stand with kindred souls.
I stand with millions all around the globe with kindred goals.
We stand for peace.
We stand for peace.
We stand for justice.
We stand for justice.
We stand for
working for a world that works for all of us.
We stand today.
We stand to choose our fate.
We stand tomorrow in the world that we this day create.
We stand today.
We stand together.
We stand tomorrow in a new world where we all can live in peace.
I am one.
my